back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. And the trade winds, they are a-blowing. Let's head to the trade desk, brought to you by Tile Town with producer Josh Elliott Wolf.
Yeah, the latest from David Pignota, confirmed by Elliott Friedman. Jake Wallman grittying his way from the Sharks to Edmonton.
Nobody actually said grittying their way.
That was a Josh insert.
Okay, that was a Josh insert. Fair
anyway,
enough.
Jake Wallman heading to the Oilers. The chatter, according to Pignota, a first-round pick going back to San Jose. So we'll see. Not fully confirmed, but Elliott Friedman putting some confirmation on that. Not fully done yet, though.
If that's a first-round pick, that's nuts.
Yeah.
We'll see if it is a first. But they gave up the Red Wings, a second-round pick, to get rid of Jake Wallman.
Yes.
This summer.
Jake Wallman... Just was given up for free to the Detroit Red Wings, was he not? It was future considerations going back the other way, I think. And now they're getting a first round pick out of it. This is a disaster class by one Steve Yzerman.
Well, no, they gave up a pick to get him off their hands, didn't they?
They did, actually. Yeah. Rechecking this. NHL.com had the wrong info. San Jose Sharks acquired Jake Wallman and a 2024 second round pick, the 53rd pick in the draft from Detroit for future considerations.
Mandela effect moments. I misremember something. I took as fact.
Well, actually, it's Roger Clemens that misremembers things. San Jose Sharks acquired Jake Wallman in a 2024 second. So, yeah, they got Wallman and a second rounder for future considerations. And now they're also getting a first round draft choice out of it, we think. But we'll keep you updated on what the actual return is. Canucks have just made the Carson Soucy trade official as well. So Carson Soucy, if you missed it, heading to the New York Rangers in exchange for a 2025 third round draft choice. Which belongs to the San Jose Sharks, which the New York Rangers acquired earlier today in a trade that sent Riley Smith, one of the original Vegas misfits, back to Vegas. So that's how it's all worked out so far today. The Trade Desk brought to you by Tile Town. Want to trade your old look for a new look? Come see the latest in new styles at Tile Town. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated for over 50 years. Visit them today at tiletown.ca. Let's bring in our next guest. He is a Thursday analyst for us every single week, and you saw him on the panel last night in a lovely green suit next to Satyar Shah. It is Landon Farrar. What's happening, Landon?
Good. Just waiting for them to bring back the green jerseys. So I'm ready for it.
The green jerseys, yeah, it would be a nice look. Canucks can never seem to settle on one jersey, although I feel like they've worn the black skate jersey more often than they've worn the traditional home blue this year. I don't know the actual numbers, but it certainly feels like the black skate has been more prominent this year.
Yeah, and I think that's probably the right decision. It's a good-looking jersey. There's no reason to overcomplicate it. You got something great. Just keep going with it.
As a player, do you feel like tougher in a black jersey? Like, do you feel more intimidating as a team in a black jersey?
I wouldn't even say that. I would just say, like, as long as the jersey's cool, you feel good going out. Like, I will say, not at the NHL level, but at the other leagues I've played in, there are some jerseys I've put on, and you just look down, and you're like, I do not look very cool right now.
I'm going to have to do a little check on some of your other jerseys, and we'll circle back before the end of the interview. So Carson Soucy gets moved today, waives his no-trade clause to go to join up with ex-teammate JT Miller and the New York Rangers. It was a tough season for Carson, and I think the Canucks, who are looking ahead to next year, opening up some cap space, get a draft pick back in return, probably a good fit for everyone to move on from the situation.
Yeah, I think that's, you know, the best way to say it. I think it's just, it's good for everyone. You know, for the Canucks, they, you know, they've had Elias Pettersson pop up and, you know, has, you know, grabbed a full-time role and he's ready to go. So there's one spot. Then you bring in Mancini as well, who's apparently been playing, you know, in the games down in Abbotsford, done really well. And, and they like what they see so far up here. And then you have Lander coming in too. Like, so all of a sudden, like, you're pretty full on the back end. And Susie's had a tough year, and it's an opportunity for him to go somewhere else and be in the lineup and try and get himself kind of, you know, back on the right path here.
Yeah, and you know, it was pretty clear when his name was out in trade rumors that he was eventually going to get moved. When this team starts really exploring it, and you mentioned the logjam all of a sudden on the back end, it made sense for them to make that move. And I know a lot of fans are kind of expecting the Canucks to make more moves, and even a guy like Derek Forbort, but it seems like they really like what he's brought on the PK. And if you're bringing in so many young guys for next year, you have DPD, you have Ylander, and even Mancini, it's probably good to have a veteran around as well to fight for a spot, but also be there for insurance.
Yeah, insurance, but not only that, like, if you trust that veteran as well, like, that's another guy that is standing in line waiting to go with the young guys every day. Standing there after a meeting and can help kind of explain what was just said if they had any extra questions. Like, it's just another role model that's in front of them. And with Forbort in particular, like, from everything that I've heard, like, he's a guy that's really, really well liked, and he goes about his work in the right way. Like, it's someone that they'd want, you know, their younger guys to kind of follow as well as, you know, the Myers and Hronek and Hughes. Like, if you can have good mentors in front of them, you know, it's not the worst thing to keep that sometimes either, even if you can get a, you know, a decent pick out of it.
Yeah, and now the focus, obviously, looking ahead to tomorrow and Brock Besser's situation becomes probably the biggest one. And, you know, of course, there's a lot of discussion. What should the Canucks do here? Should they just sell no matter what if you're not going to get the extension done? It is tough because Brock has been so good for this team through his career. You can see how he can help this team towards a playoff push. But that's where the situation again gets murky, given you're trying to build not just for the rest of this year, but also looking ahead to the next years ahead.
Yeah, like, I mean, if the year was going great and, you know, they were well locked into a playoff spot and they were really, you know, going to make a push, like, you know, the thoughts were at the start of the season, then you can stomach the, you know, he's our own rental, and if we lose him, we lose him, and, you know, but we're going for it. Like, that's something you can live with, but, you know, it's not like it's, you know, it's a secret. Like, even the team has said, like, this is, you know, this has been a really tough year. We're, as of right now, like, we're not contenders. So as soon as that's kind of known, like, you just got to look to next year. And if you don't see a place for him here long term, like, you know, he wants long term in the deal, then you have to move on and be okay with whatever the best return you can get back. But, you know, to let him walk at the end of free agency and they didn't make playoffs or they just made it in and lose quickly in the first, like, it makes that a lot harder to take. And not only that, but it hurts you for a couple of years till you can kind of figure that out again.
Yeah, and at the same time, like, it seems like they're okay with doing that because I think they value getting Quinn back and being in the race and making the playoffs and having that type of posture. And I mean, that's, and I'm with you. I'd rather see them, you know, cash in and get the value. But can you understand the reasoning if they do it in that for those reasons?
Yeah, I mean, again, like, we're sitting here and we don't have the full picture. Like, we're not in Alvin and Rutherford's office sitting there and, like, knowing everything that's actually there. So with the full picture, you know, they can make that decision. And if they think it's in the best interest of the team and they look down the road and they see how, you know, they can make whatever work and still come out in a good position, then yeah, like, it's totally okay. But again, without the full picture that we don't have, like, it's hard to see it that way, at least for me.
Yeah. As far as this game goes, I mean, Brock's got 4 goals since the calendar turned. You know, Rick Tocchet alluded to it yesterday. He's kind of struggled to find his way or find chemistry with another player since Miller's gone out the door. Is that part of the discussion too? Like, Brock, the best we've seen of Brock has been with JT Miller, and well, JT Miller's not a Vancouver Canuck anymore, so how does that fit work?
Yeah, I mean, like, it is a, that is a big part of this. You know, like you had said, like Talk had alluded to it yesterday, like JT drove a lot of Besser's offense, and that's not taking anything away from, like, you still have to be able to put the puck in the net. Like, it's really hard, and, you know, this Canuck team knows it this year. It is, they've had a tough time putting it in. So that's not taking anything away from it, but then you start to look at where they've tried putting them since that trade, and they've kind of tried them everywhere. And, I mean, it's hard because Pettersson is, you know, where he's at with his game. Like, if he was at the top of his game and Besser gets thrown to his line, maybe that does work. And, you know, Pettersson can be the guy that's skating it through the neutral zone and getting in and then finding him, you know, somewhere around the net, and that works. But that's not the case. So as he starts to kind of move around a little bit, you're trying to look and see next year, where does that fit, or what would we have to bring in, and what would that cost? Does that work? Like, there's not just one simple solution to everything. Like, there's so many things that there's a chain reaction after them.
Yeah, and you know what's really interesting about this deadline is we might see the team do nothing outside of the Soucy trade. Like, that might be the only thing they do the rest of this way. But at the same time, we might see a number of different trades, and we could even see Besser get moved and Suter also get moved. But I also think if those things are happening, they're going to be making an addition as well. They're looking to add somebody significant before the deadline is over. Like, what are the chances we see something pretty earth-shattering, you think, between now and tomorrow?
Well, considering it'll be the first day that I work a trade deadline over with you guys, I hope there's something earth-shattering. But, I mean, I don't know. It's so hard to tell, right? Like, I mean, I feel like I'm just going to repeat you here, but, like, it could easily be there's no more moves, or I can act like, yeah, I can see a big move being made because this management group is aggressive. And if they find the right deal for them that, you know, that they're happy with, like, it doesn't feel like they ever have a second guess in them. Like, as soon as they find what they want, they make the deal and it gets done. So, you know, I could see it getting done. I think it's going to be on the lower side tomorrow for them, just a couple, maybe a couple of the little moves. But past that, I don't see it. But, I mean, I'm not going to take it off the table because this group has been known to make big moves when they're available.
As far as last night goes, it was a good performance against a tired team below you in the standings, but a good performance nonetheless. Can't take that away. Can't take that away too much from the team. Just where do you think this team is trending right now through all these moves, how they're playing, and how realistic it is that they can make this push for the playoffs?
I mean, it's realistic for sure because, I mean, it's just like a lot of what we've seen this year, but, you know, it is a bit of a different group now, but they have games like last night where they come out and, like, it was the fastest I've seen the Canucks play as a group in a very long, like, before the break, for sure. And, like, you can see how they can be a really good team, but then you watch the couple games before, and so it's, like, it's really hard to know. And then, you know, on top of that, you see, you know, just injuries. Like, you have Hughes that's still out. Like, there's so many question marks that's still on this team, but the belief is there. Like, you watch that last night and you're like, there's no way that team's not a playoff team. Who knows what happens when they get there, but they're good enough to be in the playoffs. It's just about being able to consistently get there. And for this team, I think the biggest thing is, like, they have to have four lines that are going. They had it last night and you could see what difference it was. Because for the past while here, there's been one, maybe two lines going, and then there's dead periods.
Yeah.
And it makes it really tough.
Well, and I think what we saw last night was, I mean, they were moving their feet like the coach talks about. They were getting inside. They were good on the forecheck. And they played really hard. They had real urgency in their game. And I understand it's hard to play at that level because that's like an 8 to a 9 to 10 effort level consistently. But can they do that for the final 20? Like, out of the final 21 games, can you get 19 of these types of efforts at least?
I mean, 19 of that, like, effort, yes. Execution, man, like, you got, that's got to be one heck of a run there. And that's where it's a bit tougher. Like, effort-wise, 100%, that same effort can be there for the rest of the season. Mentally, can you stay at that level is the tough part. And for this team that has had so much go on, and they play like that, like, if they can just string together a couple games here and just get the ball rolling, then honestly, like, yeah, I think they can have a great finish to the season, but it's just about getting through kind of that, like, that mental barrier of two and three games in a row of solid effort, and if it, the results aren't there early in the game, just sticking with it, not trying to, you know, move up quicker. Now you're starting to turn pucks over more and just compounding things, right?
Landon Ferraro, our guest. The inevitable question, what'd you make of Elias Pettersson's game last night?
I mean, there was better parts to it. You know, I thought he came out more aggressive. He clearly had the idea in his head that he was going to shoot more. And the play that I liked, and me and Sad were talking about it on the panel, but, you know, but during the period, was he gets the kind of two-on-one that turns to a two-on-two, and he tries to sauce the pass through. But you could see before he takes that pass, like, he's trying to find a shot. But the D played it well. He moved over, and he's, like, the play was make a pass. But I liked that he was still looking shot. And then when he messed up the pass, you could see how disappointed he was because he made the right play. And I saw last night that he was making some more plays. But, again, like, kind of like the team, but for him specifically, like, he's had games where it looks like, okay, like, you know, he's starting to come here. Like, this looks better. And then it goes the other way. So, you know, I said it last night, like, I truly do think that he had his kind of aha moment. And just the way that he talked the other day, like, I do think it's a new start for him here. And I think he's going to get going. But, you know, it's up to him to do it. I don't even mean him to show us. He doesn't have to show me anything. But for himself to show that he can still do this.
Yeah, and I think that's the thing we want to see. It's him. Can he do it here for the final, you know, 21 games and really take this team to that next level? And, you know, one thing I'm curious about, too, is how long a guy like Jonathan Lekkerimäki can stay. What did you see in his game last night? And, you know, can he stick here for the rest of the season?
Well, yeah, like, I mean, he had a couple chances. He had that shot early, and you can see him as plays are moving around the offensive zone. Like, he's got great instincts. He gets himself to good areas on the ice. A couple times he got himself into a good spot and the pass was just a little off, and so the thing doesn't get off his stick as clean. But at the same time, like, you know, I like his game. He's smart, he moves around. I think he's going to get better, but, you know, again, that's where, just like, if you can just get him in these games and get him playing meaningful minutes to where he's really starting to build, because, again, like, it's different. I'm not held to anyone's, you know, responsibility or anything for whether this team wins or loses. Like, to me, I look at this team right now, and they're not going to win a Stanley Cup. I just don't see it. So to me, it's about building for next year. Like, obviously, you don't want to lose the next 20 games. You want to win as many as you possibly can, and get in the playoffs if you can, to get these young guys as well some playoff experience. But getting Lekkerimäki good solid minutes, getting him some power play time, see if he can get some real confidence going into summer, and not only that, but getting a real sense of what he needs to really work on, and not just you played a couple games and you think you get it, but, you know, you're in the slog for a bit and you feel how hard the season is and you feel how hard the games get at the end of the season. Then he goes into summer training and he's got a bit more juice to get into the gym and get stronger and be better for next season. Like, that's what I would be excited about to see.
Before we let you go, there is some chatter that Brad Marchand, even if injured, could get traded before tomorrow's deadline, maybe somewhere out west. You were a teammate of his. Could you imagine Brad Marchand playing for anybody other than the Bruins?
It'd be really, really weird. to see him in another jersey. But, I mean, for me, I don't – anywhere he would end up if he actually did get moved, he would I just know I will not miss that first game because it's going to be emotional for him, but at the same time, he's going to want to show that he's all in on his new team, and it's going to be must-see TV off the top of my head. That's what I'm thinking, but it would be really weird. Like, to me, that's someone that would retire a Bruin.
Yeah.
He loves it there. And, you know, he means a lot to that dressing room, clearly, and to that organization. It would be weird to see him somewhere else, but with where Boston's at, I mean, I'd love to see him play somewhere else and have another run at it.
Yeah, it's if he does get traded, it smells like a move the Vegas Golden Knights might make, but we'll see how that that plans out. I have to say, looking through your DEL jersey collection and the Cologne Sharks just weren't doing it for me. Neither the Berlin Polar Bears.
Not the best one there. See, the hard thing in Europe is they change the jersey every single year. So Cologne,
yeah,
we had two good ones and one not so good. And then the old Ice Baron Berlin.
Yeah,
those were all right. But if you look at the ones now, like. Ty Ronning's over there lighting it up for the Ice Baron Berlin, and their jerseys are awesome now.
Yeah, we've had this discussion with Brett Festerling in the past. He had he got the luck of the draw with the Thomas Sabo Ice Tigers. You know, those are sharp jerseys.
Yeah, he was in the heyday of they lost the Thomas Sabo sponsorship. Now they're a big jeweler over in Europe, and apparently they're. How everything runs a little bit different than it did before.
Yeah. I could see that. Landon, thanks for this. We'll see you tomorrow for deadline coverage. Thanks for this.
Yeah, have a good one, guys.
There he is, Landon Ferraro, joining us here on Canuck Central, and we'll be a part of our deadline coverage tomorrow afternoon as well. Trade deadline coverage on Sports at 650, brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway for diehard pizza people. Order online at AJ's.pizza. There's been a lot of hype around this deadline, Sat, but so far not a lot of substance, right? You know, there's been some moves today. The Lightning made their big splash yesterday, but so much focus on Rantanen and, you know, now Chris Johnson saying that it's still, you know, possible that the Bruins trade Brad Marchand. It feels like a lot being held up by the big names on the market as it currently stands.
Yeah, and I mean, we always get this too at the deadline. You know, we talked about how Pedersen's name is out there again, and you hear now for guys like Marchand and even some other names get popped up. And ultimately, do these guys get moved? Oftentimes, you don't see them all happen, but the likelihood creates intrigue. I do think for Marchand, it's super interesting, right? Because if the Bruins are actually going to take a pretty significant step back to retool or take a completely new direction, then moving him makes sense. But like, how are you replacing that? And are they a team that truly wants to go through a rebuild? I'll believe it when I see it if
yeah.
Marchand gets traded.
Marchand is, at this stage of his career, he's still a solid complementary player. I mean, we saw that at the Four Nations.
He was great. Yeah.
He was great at the Four Nations. The thing for the Bruins is, like, they just don't have any horses right now. I mean, they still have Charlie McAvoy on the back end, who's hurt right now, obviously, from the injury he got at the Four Nations. Like, they don't have any centermen, and they've got Pastrnak, but I don't know. It's hard to build a team around no number one centers, and that's what the Bruins are trying to do, and I just don't know how they fix that problem with or without Brad Marchand in the short to medium term. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, we'll get more into this. Randy Janda is going to join us. That's coming up next as we continue to break down your Vancouver Canucks here on Sportsnet 650.
Catch up on what happened in Vancouver sports with Halford and Brough in the morning. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back on Canuck Central, hour number two here on the program. Canucks back to action tomorrow night against the Minnesota Wild. That is obviously post-trade deadline. Deadline going down tomorrow at noon. Quick check-in on the out-of-town scoreboard. Red Wings up 2-1 on the Utah Hockey Club at the end of one period of play. Utah, of course, very much in the thick of things for the second wild card. later on. While just about to get going, the Stars hosting the Flames as Calgary still ahead of Vancouver in the standings for the wild card position. All right, let's bring in our next guest. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, welcoming in Randeep Janda, color analyst for Canucks on Sportsnet 650, and of course, host of Hockey Night in Canada, Punjabi, and he is a presentation of Bells and Whistles, your new favorite place to catch all the action, hockey, football, soccer, and more on Fraser, right in front of the Fraser Hood on socials, AT Bells and Whistles YVR. Thanks for this, Randeep. I didn't mean to interrupt your day doing the grouse grind. How you doing?
No snowy grouse grind today. I took the gondola off.
What a coward. Unbelievable.
No, I got to follow the rules. They have the trail closed. You know me, Reese. I follow the rules.
We know Vancouverites. Very much a place that follows the rules.
Yeah. Well, she's gone snowshoeing up the mountain instead.
I was going to say, guys, I'm like a bear. I hibernate during the winter. This cardio is struggling right now.
Did you? Well, we still got that bet for the sun run, don't we? Or
yeah, no, it's working its way. Yeah, of course. Mo Farah, I remember all of that.
Did you fight a grizzly bear up there at least, or no?
No. Oh, okay. Luckily not. They're still sleeping up there, Reese.
A lot to get into. Obviously, we'll talk Canucks, but they did make a trade today. Carson Soucy off to the New York Rangers for a third-round draft choice. Your thoughts on the deal?
Yeah, I think with Carson, you know, when we heard those kind of the report about him being chopped out there, the Canucks kind of saw him as a surplus to requirements on that left-hand side, playing out of a position on the right-hand side, occasionally getting scratched as well. It was really up to him, and it seems like, you know, going to a team that is fighting for the playoffs, kind of similar to Vancouver, was going to be a priority. Even as recently as yesterday, guys, he was saying he wanted to help the team make the playoffs. So I'm not surprised to see it. The value here is basically you get a third-round pick, but it's going to be the best one in the draft, in the third round, because it looks like it's San Jose's pick. Now the question is, do the Canucks hang on to it? Do they package it into something else? Do they make a move? This is a very active team, but with the, you know, basically the rise of Elias Pettersson, you have a redundancy on that left-hand side. You have Derek Forbert, who has played well for this group, and unfortunately for Carson Soucy, he just wasn't consistent enough. He didn't play enough games last year, but when he did, he was very good. He was good at the blue lines. He was a little bit nastier last year. And this year, we just haven't seen that version of Carson Soucy consistently enough.
Well, and I think for Soucy last year, too, he was playing a sheltered role, and this year he's not. Like, he played up the lineup, and he really struggled, and he hasn't shown at any point in his career that he can be that player playing a big role. The closest he got was in the playoffs, and that was some high-leverage minutes, and he played so well, and that's why, you know, the organization was confident in him. A lot of fans, we were confident in, you know, what he could provide this year, and it just hasn't really worked out. And I know there's been some question that, you know, the Canucks got less for him than Brian Dumoulin got, but this is the thing with Soucy. He was a projection that worked out well last year, but he's never played 19, 20 minutes a game and been a playoff performer consistently. That's something Brian Dumoulin has, and as much as they may be similar, there's a reason why he got a second-round pick and a prospect, because he's always played 20 minutes a game, played these high-leverage minutes, and being able to play high-leverage minutes is not an easy thing to do, and teams value that, and for Soucy, it's still unproven.
Yeah, for sure, and I think with Carson Soucy, that question of can he be a second-pair defenseman on a team, that was a conversation we had when he signed, guys, where, you know, it was still going to be the big question mark with them. Can he fulfill that role? And yeah, this year it showed that he wasn't that player. There's a couple of other things too. You know, you've got Dumoulin, I believe, in a second year of he was essentially a rental. His contract expires at this year. You're taking an extra year of Carson Soucy as well, which comes with money. And if you're dealing from a position of not really, you know, you have term on that deal, that value is probably going to drop a little bit as well, because you're taking on money. Now, beyond that, I think with Carson Soucy, yeah, that was kind of the question, right? And let's remember he had some trade protection as well, so that's an area where he did have an element of control. So I'm not mad at this deal. I think, you know, with what's been going on that left-hand side, we've seen some players, Elias Pettersson, take a step. Also, you know, Mancini is obviously another player that you look on the right-hand side that they want to get some games. Potentially this could help as well. since Soucy's been playing on the right-hand side. So you're going to get some younger players, get a longer look, and this also might mean that Derek Forbort stays in Vancouver a little bit longer than we anticipated.
Yeah, I think that part's interesting, right? And, you know, Elias Pettersson played well again last night, but Forbert's been a big part of the PK. You could, you know, obviously you're bringing up Elias Pettersson, right? And he's impressed you enough that you feel he's ready for regular NHL time, and that's where his next step of development is. So how do you see the left side working out, even with whenever Hughes does come back?
Yeah, I think predominantly, especially with the games being high leverage at this point, when Quinn Hughes gets back, you'd expect Elias Pettersson to kind of be that 7th D right now. I think there's a lot of respect in Derek Forbort's game, the way he kills penalties, the way he's been able to, for a team that at times hasn't defended around the net as strong as you want them to, and I'm talking about box outs, I'm talking about tying up sticks, I still think there's some real value with Derek Forbort playing high-intensity games down the stretch, guys. So I think Elias Pettersson is still going to be in a perfect situation where everybody's healthy. You're still probably looking for him to you know, for some spot duty. I don't think he's going to get every single game. But while Quinn Hughes is away, who knows how many games that is. You know, him playing next to Filip Hronek, I think that's something that we can all bank on. We can talk about him playing high-impact minutes, meaningful games for this team as they try to get into the playoffs. So I think that's going to be really, really important for this kid, where you want to set him up for next year and say, in camp, you know, whether it's you, whether it's Tom Billander, you're going to have a real shot to make this team. But getting this experience right now, whether it's, you know, playing up top with Filip Hronek or maybe spot duty on a third pair, I think it's going to be extremely valuable for him. But Derek Forbort, those hard-nosed minutes that, you know, denying the middle of the ice, which he's a veteran guy, he's able to do that, I'd still expect him to see the majority, the lion's share of that duty.
Yeah, I would see that too, and I can see Derek Forbort being here next season as well, right?
Sure.
So I think he's one of those guys that could fit that type of depth role, be a veteran, not make a lot of money, and they're very happy with what he's brought to the team so far. And, you know, I think we're all really, really curious to see what happens with Brock, and, you know, all options are on the table, right? They could move him if they can flip those assets to get something. They can hold on to him. They can re-sign him after the deadline, or he can walk as a free agent. Like, all these things are possible. Do you have a sense on what's happening with Besser, or is it more of what do you want to see with Brock Besser?
Yeah, I think on the Brock Besser situation, everybody's got an opinion. I saw your comments the other day. I'm very much of the opinion. My personal opinion is I think if you go past the trade deadline, the leverage swings the other way, right? From a team perspective, all of a sudden, is yesterday's price today's price? And that's a valid question, I think, post-deadline. So it's a slippery slope. In any negotiation, you don't want to give up leverage. So that's why I think from a want, and I'm hearing a lot of that from other analysts, of course, fans in the city, the conversations that we're having. But, you know, this is a tough situation. This is a player that likes this city. He talked about that a couple of days ago after practice. You could tell this is a place where he wants to be. But for an organization, you have a price. You have a term that you want to stay within. And I think there's a couple of big questions to answer, guys. We know he is a 25 to 30 goal guy. Last year, he was a 40 goal scorer. But the big question, and Rick Tocchet mentioned this as well, a lot of the offense came from JT Miller driving play. We've seen him go up and down the lineup playing with Filip Hedl. We've seen him play with Q Suter. We've seen him play with Elias Pettersson. That fit, we haven't necessarily seen it perfectly 5-on-5 yet. Before you sign an extension, you'll want to see, you know, what's that valuation? If JT Miller was one of the root causes of that production, that's not a discredit to Brock Besser. Brock's a heck of a player, but that duo was locked in for a couple years, and you got some really good production, most notably your career high. If that's not a thing anymore, this is a very difficult valuation, and that's on top of, you know, what we know about Brock skating and how that might age. So in terms of, you know, the sense I get, I think we see from all the reports that you reported earlier on as well, that it seems like it's kind of a lukewarm market on the trade front. But I think for the Canucks, this is a difficult negotiation because you're essentially trying to figure out, all right, what's that duo moving forward if we lock him in? And, you know, what's he capable of doing with a different center, which is, in my opinion, a valid question.
And, you know, the other part of this is like, okay, if Brock's gone, who's scoring goals?
Yeah,
who's scoring goals for this team? Not just for this year, but even next year. Like, you have a lot of goals to fill on this lineup, a lot of offense to fill in this lineup, having lost JT Miller and potentially losing Brock Besser on top of that. Where are the goals coming from?
Well, there's three paths to that, right? You bring back the player and you say, hey, you know, 25 goals in our lineup is worth the term and whatever that dollar figure might be, total money, whether it's, you know, 45 plus, whether it's 50 plus, whatever that number might be. The other thing, guys, internally, like, that's a lot of pressure on Jonathan Lekkermäki to up his game next year and say, hey, you're in the NHL. Like, that's immediate expectation in the top six, which we know this is a difficult, tough league year to year. Of course, there's expectation of the first round pick, but you're going to need your players that you have under contract right now to pick up their game. But, you know, that's a lot of pressure for a kid to really move up to the next level. Now, the other thing, Reach, the third path is free agency, right? They've been able to accumulate, what, $13.3 million over the last little bit here to use for next year. You know, do you dip into free agency? But here's the question, guys. There are no guarantees in free agency. You can have that money ready to spend, but if a player wants to re-sign with their current team, you're not in a good situation. If a player uses you know, you as leverage and signs in another city, we've seen that happen in Vancouver as well. So, you know, that, how are they going to get offense? I think it's going to be a combination of all of those things. Now, the question is, that overall money for Brock Besser, I for the record, want to state, I like Brock Besser as a Vancouver Canuck, but it's got to be at that right price. And it's got to kind of bake in that factor that, okay, that skating is going to drop off from a team perspective. Do you build for that? Do you prepare for that? And what is that term? So, you know, I think there's got to be a combination of those things. You got to be ready for a couple of young players to take a step up. I think this team needs to address scoring free agency and speed in free agency regardless. But, yeah, adding 25 goals in today's NHL just like that is not an easy thing.
No, it's not, right? And I think, you know, what the thing that I'm most intrigued by is the Canucks being able to make a big swing. And we know they're trying. Like, you know, losing JT, and as good as Filippiedl's been, it's very clear they're missing that real driving forward as well. And we talk about Pettersson all we want, but whether you keep Pettersson or not, you have to replace that. And even if you keep Pettersson and he becomes that player, you still have to add that type of guy. That's just the thing that I kind of wonder about here. You know, the Canucks are aggressive. You know, they want to convince Quinn. Like, I think there's real urgency. The question just is, can they actually pull it off in time?
Yeah, and I think with this, really, the timing of this, and this is where management's really got to do two things, right? They got to toe the line of being competitive because you're still in a playoff spot. And I know there's going to be a lot of fans yelling at their radio saying, hey, they're not going to win the Cup, so why do that? But from an organizational perspective, you still want to compete. You want players like a Quinn Hughes, who I should, you know, mention that this is a guy that's been trying to play through everything. He wants to make the playoffs. Organizationally, of course, you want to toe the line of, hey, you don't want to be aggressive. You don't want to be maybe a buyer, but if your captain prioritizes winning that much and getting to the playoffs, of course, you have to take that into consideration. To your point, Zach, a couple of years down the road, he's got a decision to make too. So I think it is something the organization is going to have to answer some questions in the next 17, 18 hours of how competitive can you be, while at the same time look at the medium to long term of it's not necessarily about this year, it's about next year. And I think, you know, the more you look at this roster, the more you look at the long-term outlook, this team not only needs that offensive punch, they need speed, but they need an early 20s to maybe a mid-20s forward. Take your pick as a center or a winger, where they just need a little bit of infusion of skill, of course, but that speed, even with like guys like Drew O'Connor, you know, you've got some speed in Kiefer Sherwood as well. It's still lacking that speed that you need along the wings and that center position. I should mention Filippiedl as well, but guys, out of 12 forwards, you know, I've mentioned three that fit that profile. You need somebody probably in their mid-20s, like a Hedl, to add a little bit more oomph to that lineup.
So Elias Pettersson puts in a solid performance, comes off the back of some praise for his engagement in practice, how he's putting in some extra work in practice. Probably It's probably not a coincidence then that he followed up a hard week in practice with a pretty good performance last night. But I guess the question we all have, and certainly our listeners, who some I know are rolling their eyes at like Pettersson having a no point performance and getting a little bit of praise for it, are wondering, can he build off it? Because we've seen him put in solid single performances before this season, but what's coming next for Elias Pettersson?
And you know what? That's a question that I think all of us can understand, whether you watched that game and you walked away from saying, hey, good for Pettersson, he had a good game, or if you're kind of rolling your eyes and saying, okay, great, you're still making a lot of money. I think I'm more optimistic on it to say this is a step in the right direction. Now, you got to string together a bunch of games. You got to string together, production, because the bottom line,
the whole final third of the season, like I want to see this guy put 20 games together where he looks like the guy that got paid $11.6 million.
100% reach. And you know, we talked about this yesterday, Sat, where good step in the right direction, you showed that you were decisive in certain moments, but we are talking about a different standard here where you can't lower the bar to say one game good, like good that he that's a positive sign. The shot attempts were up. I like the shoot-first mentality. And that's the thing that really stood out to me, where even after the availability in practice a couple of days ago, he mentioned that, hey, I'm a pass-first guy. I have to change that, or I have to tweak that a little bit. And he did, right? Now, okay, keep doing that. You know, try to aim, you know, top corner. Try to, you know, work for the rebound. If you're playing with Connor Garland, Dakota Joshua, they will get to the inside. They will battle for rebounds. They'll create traffic. Use that shot that you've had amongst, you know, one of the best shots in the league early on in his career. Get that mojo back. And I thought yesterday was a step in that direction. He was attacking a little bit more. But, you know, we've seen this in certain ways before. You gotta build on it. You can't just – we can't be talking about the next game against Minnesota, guys, where he was MIA again. I think attitudinally – certainly a very honest Elias Pettersson a couple of days ago. Hopefully this is kind of his moment where he sees the light at the end of the tunnel and says, all right, I got this. I got my mojo back. But he's going to have to back it up with, to your point, Reach, not one, not two, not three. We're going to be having to talk about double-digit games here for the market to really, really believe.
Well, hopefully it works out better than that quote LeBron gave, because they didn't win that many titles. but you know the other thing I wanted to ask about was about Pugh Suter, because you know there's been a lot of speculation about him, and we'll see what happens here by tomorrow's deadline. But he had another decent game, and he's been a really good Canuck since they acquired him. And as much as we talk about replacing Besser, replacing Suter isn't necessarily going to be easy. You'd hope you can replace a player like Pugh Suter, who's more of a second, third line type of player, but it's not easy finding versatile guys that can do a lot of different things for you. So that's the one I wonder about as well. It may not be necessarily easy to replace Suter as well if they do move on from him.
Yeah, he's a player that, you know, you start looking at his, the word is versatile, right? Down the middle, he can play on the wing, whether it's in the bottom six or, as we saw last year in the top six in the playoffs, when him, Miller, and Besser were possession hogs. We've seen him set a career high in goals this year. And one of the more underrated things, guys, power play for sure, but the PK. Him and Teddy Bluger on that PK unit have done a great job. And sure, there's a correlation of Marcus Pettersson coming to this team and the PK doing really well, but that duo has done fantastic when they played together. And with Pugh Suter, he gives you a little bit of everything. He gives you value. And the ability to score big goals. He's not a guy that's going to necessarily wow you with his skating or, you know, pick corners with his shot, but he's such a smart player. And when you're trying to get into the playoffs, when you're trying to win specific matchups, when you're, you know, trying to kill a penalty, you need players like that. But here's the problem. It's that contract season yet again, where if you feel like you can do something in the playoffs, this is a player you look at and think he's probably going to make double of what he's earning right now. He's probably in that $3+, $3.5 million range. Is that something you can stomach for what has been this year a third line player? He's valuable, but what is that price? And I think for Pugh, great story, a very smart player. I just don't know if you can do that long term with him when, you know, we've heard this management team, we've heard the player, individuals in this organization say, you got to sign players that can really, you know, outperform their contract. And with Pugh Suter, I just don't know if that value is there when you're looking at potentially a $3.5 million, maybe a $3.75 million player. Great story. I just don't know if that continues in Vancouver.
So a quick look elsewhere. Edmonton seems like they're going to get Jake Wallman here, maybe a first-round pick going San Jose's way. They try to beef up their blue line a little bit. Winnipeg is first in the league right now. What are they going to do ahead of the deadline? We know the Maple Leafs are probably going to do something. Which Canadian team's got a big splash in them, Randeep?
I think it's got to be Toronto, guys. You look at what Tampa Bay did yesterday with Yanni Gourde and Oliver Bjorkstrand. They're loading up. Their third line looks like it could be a second or first line on some teams in this league. Florida is tinkering. We know that they're probably going to be up to something pretty big here as well. And with Toronto, a couple of things. They've defended off the rush really well this year. Their top five, that's the Chris Tanev effect. But they could use some more help on that back end. They need some depth there. And, guys, second, third line center is a serious need for that team, too. I don't know if that's Braden Schenn. I don't know if they're going to go maybe for the third line option of Scott Laughton. But if anybody needs to make an impact, I think it's Brad Treliving, based on the fact that all of those other teams are making moves. You've got the two Florida teams loading up. Like this is the 1990s era of baseball right now. They're juiced. And right now, the Toronto Maple Leafs need to add something too. You know, Marner has done his job this year. Tavares has had a bounce back year. Matthews is what trending towards 35 goals. They need just another centerman to really, push. So I look at that team. And also I just wonder about the LA Kings, right? This is, they're hanging around their team that's there, but it feels like they're looking for that big piece, whether it's Mikko Rantanen or somebody else. That's another team. They feel like they need something just to give them that extra push right now. And maybe that extra pop for the playoffs. So those are the two teams I'm watching.
Yeah, the Leafs could definitely use a little bit extra, both up front and on the back end. And I think, Winnipeg, you gotta strike while the iron's hot. What could they be up to? That'll be interesting to watch ahead of tomorrow. Thanks for this, Randeep. We'll see you tomorrow.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. When's your flight?
My flight where?
Jamaica, isn't that your annual? Fly to Jamaica on the deadline.
When I looked at the weather, I was like, maybe I can go golfing soon. And now I looked at the weather; it's just rain. So I was like, Jamaica doesn't sound all that bad right now.
not bad. Thanks, boys. Yep. Always great to be on with you.
There is Randeep Janda joining us here on Canuck Central, and he is a presentation of Bells and Whistles. I think it is going to be interesting. Ryan Rashog just tweeting out that sounds like it's going to be a conditional pick and a prospect for Wallman once it gets finalized, going from San Jose to the Oilers. And it looks like they'll be using Evander Kane's cap hit on LTIR. So I guess the assumption is that Kane is not going to be ready until the playoffs for the Edmonton Oilers there. But
yeah.
Pretty much all seven teams still have at least a shout. All seven Canadian teams all at least have a shout of the playoffs. Not all of them are going to make it, of course, but could make for an interesting deadline in that sense.
Yeah, it really could. And Edmonton now, I think they've probably done, they've made their moves now, right?
Like, yeah.
They picked up Kasperi Kapanen earlier. He's been whatever for them, but, has a little bit of depth. But I thought getting Trent Frederick was a really good move for them. Getting that type of center, it's going to help them a big way. And just, big player too that can do a lot of different things for them. And getting Jake Wallman gives them another credible guy. I'm not sure any of those moves really raises their ceiling, but that's a team that needs to plug holes, right? So I think they did fairly well adding those two guys at the deadline. Like, it's nothing super sexy, but I think those are functional guys in the postseason. I do wonder about Wallman, though, at times in the playoffs, but I think Frederick's going to help them out.
Yeah. Wallman, he does some really good things, but defensive coverage gets that much more of a magnifying glass around it come playoff time, and he'll have to prove a little bit there when they get to it. All right. Still a lot to get to as we continue to set up deadline day in the National Hockey League. It'll be at 12 noon tomorrow. We'll have coverage all day long on Sportsnet 650 and, of course, on the TV side on Sportsnet starting at 7 a.m. Pacific time tomorrow morning. Trade deadline coverage on Sportsnet 650 brought to you by AJ's Pizza on East Broadway for diehard pizza people. Order online at AJ's.com. pizza. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, Canuck Central on Sportsnet 650.